Pesach's Oz Perek Hei Mishnah Dalet until Perek Hei Mishnah Yud Zayin. The Mishnah's list of fours continues, and this Mishnah lists Abramidus Beholchel Beis HaMedrash. There are four measures in terms of those people who go to the Beis HaMedrash in order to learn, or as we'll see perhaps, not necessarily in order to learn. Firstly, the first category is Holich Ve'Eino Oseh. He goes to the Beis HaMedrash and he sits down in his place in the Beis HaMedrash, but he doesn't do any learning. Nevertheless, says the Mishnah, Sechar Halicha B'Yodoi, that he receives reward for the mere going to the Beis HaMedrash, the fact that he went there. That in itself is considered to be something positive. The Gemara says that if somebody's Yetzihara is trying to convince them to do an Aveira, so in order to escape that Yetzihara, Moshchehu le Beis HaMedrash, drag him to the Beis HaMedrash, just go run to a holy place. The Gemara doesn't even say that you should go and learn Torah. It says go to the Beis HaMedrash, that in itself is a tool to fight the Yetzihara, and what better place to be situated in other than a Beis HaMedrash? And in fact, even if he doesn't go there in order to learn, eventually, if he's situated there enough, he will end up hearing words of Torah, he will end up probably even wanting to learn himself. Alright, the second category is Oisav Ein Holech, somebody who does the learning, he learns, but he doesn't go to the Beis HaMedrash, he learns by himself at home. Schar Maisav Yodai, he has the reward of the actual learning in his hand. He certainly gets rewarded for that. However, he doesn't get reward for going to the Beis HaMedrash. There's certainly a advantage learning in a Beis HaMedrash where there are other people learning, to learn in public. The power of a lot of people learning and the level of holiness which is situated there is greater than the level if you're learning by yourself privately. And in addition, it encourages other people to learn when they see more people learning. Thirdly, Holich Vayiseh, somebody who goes to the Beis HaMedrash and he learns there. Chosid, he's considered to be pious. Leholich Vayiseh, if there is somebody who doesn't go to the Beis HaMedrash and he doesn't learn by himself either, Rosha, he's considered to be wicked, he doesn't learn. Every single Jew is obligated to learn Torah. Somebody who doesn't learn Torah at all is considered to be a wicked person. Of course, everybody needs to learn Torah to their level, whatever that level might be, but if somebody doesn't learn at all, then the Mishnah calls him a Rosha, a wicked person. Mishnah Tesvov. A couple of Mishnahs ago in Mishnah Yud Beis, the Mishnah listed four categories of students, people when learning Torah, in terms of their level of talent and ability to understand things and remember them. And this Mishnah is going to do a similar thing, but the focus in this Mishnah is more one's ability to analyze and delve into deeper ideas when learning. The focus is more on one's independent part in his learning. There are four measures when talking about people who sit in front of Talmid Chachomim and the relationship between that which they hear and really what they do with that which they hear. And the Mishnah is going to compare each of these four categories to four different utensils. Sfoig, a sponge, Umashpich, a funnel, Mashmeres, a strainer, Venofa, and a sieve. So the first category is Sfoig, a sponge, Usovich, a zakol. This refers to somebody who absorbs everything that he hears, any suggestion, any idea, any logic which somebody says, so this is considered to be good. However, he hasn't got the ability to differentiate really between a good piece of logic and something which is a more of a stretch, a more original idea. That is the first category. The second category, mashpech, a funnel, shemachnis bazoi, umaitz bazoi, the mashpech is something which allows the liquid to come in on one end and go out the other. And so to this person, the learning goes in one ear and out the other ear. He doesn't find the time and hasn't got the ability to analyze that which he has heard. It could be he can repeat that which was said, but he doesn't understand it at all. He doesn't understand the logic which was stated. Thirdly, Mashmeres, a strainer, Shemitzios Hayayin, a strainer brings out the wine. The Koletis is Hashmorim, and it collects, it keeps the harder parts of the wine, the dregs, the sediment, that which is left in the wine, that which is turned hard, which is really the part of the wine which one doesn't want. So to this person, his logical mind is not developed, and as such, when a true logic is stated, he doesn't really understand it properly, doesn't relate to it, and he hasn't got the ability to analyze it, whereas when logic, which isn't necessarily so true and correct, when that is stated, he does seem to understand it and relate to it. And finally, Venofa, a sieve, Shemitzios HaKemach, a sieve brings out the harder parts of the flour, the Kletzis HaSoiles, and keeps the finer flour. So too, this is referring to somebody who knows very well how to differentiate, how to accept and keep in his mind ideas which are very logical, and he knows to knock out and to ignore things which are not logical. Mishnah Tazayin. For the most part, the various lists of things which have a particular number theme, which we've been seeing since the beginning of this perek, that has for the most part ended. However, that having been said, the next three Mishnayos have a common theme of the number 2. Even though the Mishnah doesn't present it like that, the Mishnah is going to express something and its opposite. So that's really the number pattern for the next three Mishnayos. And even after that, we'll see that there is still a focus on the numbers in this perek. Says the Mishnah, Kol ava shitluya badovar, any love towards something or someone which is dependent on an external factor, Botel Dovar, as soon as that external factor is no longer existent, B'telo Avo, the entire love will also cease to exist. However, if the love for that person or that item or that idea, whatever it may be, is not dependent on an external factor, then Eino B'telo Olam, it will never cease to exist, since the love is for the person themselves, or the item itself, whatever it's talking about, so it is not dependent on anything else. As long as that person or that thing exists, the love also exists, because the love is for the thing itself. What is an example of a love which is dependent on an external factor? This is the love which Amlin had towards Tomar, as the Psukim in Shmuel talk about how he ran after Tamar's beauty, and because he never really loved her, but he only was looking for her beauty, that was the external factor. And very soon after, the Pasuk says, "Vayisno'eho Amnon sino gedola me'od," that Amnon despised her with a very great hatred. He hated her even more than the love which he felt towards her at the beginning. What is a prime example of love which is not dependent on anything external? This is the love between David and Yohanason. Yohanason was Shaul HaMelech's son, and they had a very true friendship. The Pasuk talks about how they literally loved each other as much as they loved themselves. They had such a strong bond. In fact, when Yonason died, David HaMelech eulogized him, and he talks at length about how much he loved Yonason, how the love which he felt towards him was greater than the love which people have for their wives. That is how deep their relationship was, and it was totally not dependent on anything external. And so indeed it lasted even until Yonason died, as we see from the way that David HaMelech spoke about him once he died. There is a beautiful Maharal, the Maharal Meprag. He asks a question on the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha. Hashem suddenly appears to Avraham Avinu, and he tells him to go to Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem continues giving him a number of commands, and Avraham passes all of the tests, and indeed proves himself to be worthy of being the first Jew. But it's quite evident already from the first test from Lech Lecha that Avraham was the chosen one. And we know the famous Medrash, which talks about when Avraham Avinu was a little child and he smashed all of the idols. And we also know about how Avraham Avinu jumped into the fire. He was willing to totally give up his life for the sake of showing that Hashem is the real God, when Nimrod threw him into the fire and he still survived. And that seems to really be the reason why Hashem chose Avraham Avinu specifically to tell him these commands, and to begin setting in place a relationship between Avraham Avinu and Hashem, and ultimately the entire Jewish people. However, if you look at the Torah itself, the first thing we know about Avraham Avinu is already at this stage where Hashem is commanding him to go to Eretz Yisrael, and he's already got a relationship with him. The Torah doesn't make any mention at all of what Avraham Avinu did to deserve all of this, of the huge self-sacrifice of him jumping into the fire for the sake of Hashem, and smashing the idols in a world where the entire world serves idolatry. The Torah doesn't make any mention of these crucial events, which are really the catalyst for Avraham Avinu becoming the father of the Jewish people. Why is it that the Torah doesn't make any mention of it? Says the Maharal Meprag, a beautiful idea, based on this Mishnah. Had the Torah written about what Avraham Avinu did in order to become the father of the Jewish people, worthy of a relationship with Hashem, it would have suggested that the entire love which Hashem has towards Avraham Avinu and his people, the Jews, was dependent on that which Avraham Avinu did. And it follows from there that if Avraham Avinu's descendants would stop following in his path, they wouldn't show the same level of self-sacrifice and faithfulness and loyalty to Hashem, then that would be it. The relationship would be over. We would no longer be the chosen ones. Chas v'shalom. It would suggest that this was a ahava that was dependent on something. That which Avraham Avinu did. So the message which the Torah is giving us by jumping straight into that strong bond and relationship with which Hashem and Avraham Avinu had already, the Torah is telling us that the love which Hashem, the Rebbein Shalom, has for his children, the Jewish people, is an ahava she'eino tluya badavar. It's a love which is not dependent on any external factor. We consider the children of Hashem, even if we end up sinning, chas v'shalom, and not necessarily fulfilling our duty towards Hashem. The love which Hashem has towards us is always going to be on that same unimaginable level, which is a totally crazy idea. The whole concept of Hashem loving us is a crazy idea, but he wants that relationship with us. And even if we've messed up, all our Father in heaven is doing is begging us to come back, begging us to restore that relationship. And no matter how far away from Avraham Avinu's values we go, and we stray away from them, Hashem will always still love us unconditionally. Mishnah Yud Zayin. Kol machlokes shi l'shem shamayim, any argument which is for the sake of heaven, those involved are arguing for the right reasons in order to reach the truth of a matter, Seifo l'skayim will ultimately be established, and the argument will bring to a positive conclusion, and they will indeed have the siyat d'shmaya, the help from Hashem, to reach the truth. On the other hand, v'she'elon l'shem shamayim, if their argument is not for the sake of Hashem, it's not for the right reasons, rather each person involved is just trying to strengthen their side, and they're not actually looking for the truth, in so far as kayim, it will not ultimately lead to establishing the truth of the matter, and the aims of the parties involved will not be reached. What is an example, what is a prime example of an argument which is for the sake of heaven? It is for the right reasons to reach the truth of a particular matter. That is the arguments between Hillel and Shammai when they argued about Torah matters in order to get to the truth. And what is a prime example, a prototype of a machlokes which is not for the sake of Hashem? This would be the argument of Korach and all of his congregation, his 250 men, when they came to argue against Moshe and Aaron and the positions which they had set. Their entire aim of there was for their own honor and glory, and because of that, their argument only led to their own deaths and downfall. Now, many take note of the fact that when talking about the machlokes, which is not for the sake of the, not for the right reasons, the Mishnah seems to mention only one side, Korach and all of his men. It doesn't mention the fact that they were arguing against Moshe and Aaron, whereas when we're talking about the argument which is for the right reasons, Hillel and Shammai, we mention both sides of the argument, Hillel versus Shammai. What is the reason for the difference? So the simple explanation is certainly, it's given by the Tosfos Yom Tov and the Medrash Shmuel. The simple explanation is that when talking about the machlokes which is for the right reason, both sides, Hillel and Shammai, were arguing for the right reason. Whereas when we're talking about a machlokes which was not for the right reasons, not for the sake of Hashem, so Moshe and Aaron, all that they were doing in the argument was, of course, for the sake of Hashem. They were not arguing for their own honor, chas v'shalom. Only one side, only one party involved in the argument was doing it not for the right reasons and for their own honor. And because of that, the Mishnah only mentions one side of the argument. That's definitely the simple explanation. However, the Noam Elimelech suggests that actually, even in the example of the argument which was not for the right reasons, the Mishnah did mention both sides of the argument. Because, says Noam Elimelech, the argument which we're talking about was not the argument between Korach and his men against Moshe and Aaron, but rather within the camp of Korach and his 250 men, they were all arguing against each other. If you have 250 people who are all arguing for something for their own honor, they're all selfish and they all care only about themselves. So they're not even going to be able to unite against Moshe and Aaron. Because each one of them is interested in them being the Kohen Gadol, in them getting the most important position. So among themselves, they were in total argument and were not united with each other. And that is what the Mishnah is talking about, the arguments which they had between each other, as opposed to the simple explanation of the Mishnah that we're talking about the argument which they were all arguing against Moshe and Aaron.